I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome along to a brand new episode of Writer's Routine. This week we are chatting to Yung Shi Chu. Her new novel is The Fox Wife. We discuss being a pantser who occasionally dabbles in the mystical art of planning. Also, whether a low daily word count really affects things at all. And you can hear how visualizing a story in a different way might help you plan on the go.
Writing for me is like listening to music or playing a piece of music. So it depends on where we are in the novel, and a lot of it is feeling. So there'll be times when I feel like now, you know, it's picking up, the music is picking up, things are getting ominous, bum, 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 and things will go fast. And other times it will hit like very flat, peaceful areas, but I have a feeling that ahead there's going to be a dip, like a roller coaster ride. And that's the feeling I'm trying to capture.
There is more with Yung Shi Chu in this week's Writer's Routine. Yes, welcome along to the show. My name is Dan Simpson. This is Writer's Routine. It's where we take a look through an author's working day to see how they get stuff done, how they plan their life, their work, their space, their family, and hopefully their ideas to give them the best chance of getting words on the page. And this week, we are brought to you by the new true crime podcast. It's Who is the Cheese Wire Killer? If you love your crime writing, which I imagine you might, and your storytelling, I bet you do, and also podcasts, which I hope you do, I think this is right up your street. Who is the Cheese Wire Killer is about a 1983 murder, which is now regarded as one of Scotland's most gruesome unsolved cases. And across 5 episodes, you are right in the centre of a live investigation. It's told through a mix of documentary and drama. They've done fantastic work with interviews as well, hearing from the senior investigating officer, forensic scientists, psychologists, as well as family members and friends of the victim too. It's a classic who's done it case that has baffled the police for over 40 years. Big development last year, a few months ago, the police announced a huge step forward, the biggest in over 40 years in the case. It's a fantastic twist on true crime podcasts. It's amazing to see how that genre can be tweaked and twisted away from what we've come to expect, because you are right in the heart of this show. You can listen to the whole lot wherever you get your podcasts. Search for Who is the Cheese Wire Killer and try and solve one of the most famous murders ever. Let's get into it then. This week with Yung Shi Chu, just published her third book in the last 10 years. The Night Tiger was a BBC Radio 2 Between the Covers pick. It was a Reese Witherspoon book pick and selected for the Big Jubilee read a couple of years ago too. The Ghost Bride, her debut, was adapted by Netflix. She is a New York Times bestseller. And her new novel is The Fox Wife. It takes us to Manchuria in 1908, weaving in folklore and myth. It's a quest for love and a murder mystery too. We discuss the changes through the last decade in her writing, why she likes to take her time. Also, oddly, how much of an impact the weather has. You can hear how debut success can affect your mindset of what you plan to follow up with. Is there a lot of pressure? How does the prospect of streaming and film rights maybe change what you do as well? And we get into it, as we always do, with what Yung Shi sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
Well, I actually have a very unglamorous writing purge. I sit on the floor and I work on a coffee table. And this is a hangover from a time when my kids were running around the house and putting Lego everywhere. We live in a small house, and it was a lot easier for me to pick up and, you know, go somewhere else to write. I also spent part of my childhood in Japan, so sitting on the floor feels very comfortable to me. So I'm sitting on the floor and at my coffee table, and if I turn my head, I can see out of the window. We've just had a really, really large storm in California the last couple of days. I don't know whether you heard about it. Lots of trees went down and everything's very damp. There were trees, branches, there's tree branches all over the garden.
So when I was doing a little bit of research about you, I saw that on, I think it was maybe like the Reese Witherspoon book club, you had mentioned you were constantly getting distracted by wildlife out the window. Is that still the case?
Well, it's suburban wildlife. So it's things like squirrels. There is a fence that separates my neighbor's house, and it is also a squirrel highway. So they come hopping along, and then they'll stop, and then they hop along a bit more. And mostly they're actually carrying produce away. So I used to, not anymore, I used to grow tomatoes, and several times a day I would see some squirrel with a half-eaten tomato, and sometimes it would just take a bite out of it and leave it on the fence. It's very aggravating.
So you're down on the floor, you're on your coffee table. What is there around you that perhaps provides inspiration? Have you got things on the walls? Is there a brightly coloured artwork, anything like that going on?
I have a large mug of tea. So I would say that would be my morning inspiration. But other than that, nothing really special. I think there's a pile of papers and books for research, so piles of books. And I'm also looking at this thing, which is a kind of a bobbin holder. So I used to, sometimes I still sew. So I used to sew clothes sometimes for my kids. And I bought one of these reels that you can stick on the wall and put your different coloured thread on it. Sorry, it's very mundane.
No. It's your life, isn't it? Not saying your life is mundane, obviously. So less of inspiration then. What is there that's practical around you that lets you know what you're there to do? I'm talking post-it notes with plot points, whiteboards, notebooks, anything like that, Yangshi.
Oh, well, you know, if I had post-it boards and a whiteboard, my husband would be overjoyed, because I really don't. I don't outline my novels. I wish I did. And I do know a number of other authors who do. I really respect them for that. But it just doesn't seem to work that way for me. I have my computer and a keyboard and the blank page. I find that quite both inspirational and sometimes terrifying, to be honest. But it's always exciting. The blank page is like a map where no one has set foot yet.
You say that it never seems to work that way for you, plotting. Have you ever tried?
I have. And sometimes I do. There have been points in different novels. My second book, The Night Tiger, there was a certain point when it was my first time writing two points of view. And I thought, I really need to figure out who did what and when. So in that case, I sort of replicate the blank page experience by using a blank piece of paper and a pencil. And then I drew a diagram of where things were going at the time. But it was mostly trying to get an idea of the shape of the novel. And that was more of a drawing for me.
We'll get into the planning of the fox wife in a little bit. But why doesn't it work that way for you? Why aren't you, and I, you know, this sounds aggressively accusatory, so I don't mean it like this, but why aren't you a writer who sits there and kind of plans the whole thing out? Like, what is it, do you think, that makes your brain perhaps slightly different from someone who does sit there and methodically spreadsheet out all 30 chapters?
Mm-hmm. And like I said, that's a wonderful quality. You know, the people who can do that, it's really amazing. But my brain, as you mentioned, doesn't quite work like that. I think what I enjoy about the novels is the element of surprise. So when things are going well, the characters start talking and moving by themselves, and they act like their own people. And that surprises me. There have been a number of plot twists and happenings which have come out of the blue. And I don't think I would have thought of that them if I had tried to plot them.
The idea of a plot twist coming out of the blue, it always fries my brain a little bit. And it won't surprise you to hear that you're not the first author that has mentioned that to me. And when do you know it's coming? As in, is it a few pages before, a few paragraphs before? Are you simply typing the words and out comes this thing that you had no idea of?
Sometimes it's like that. I know it sounds rather. And sometimes I know like a chapter ahead, like, ooh, I think this is going to happen. But there have been a couple of times when I've literally been typing and it occurred to me that. So, for example, my new novel, The Fox Wife, I started chapter 2 and the words "the detective" appeared on the page. And I thought, oh my, well, I hadn't been planning for a detective, but I suppose one has appeared and let's see what he does. So it varies. There was only one time when I actually dreamed a plot, but it wasn't for this book. And it didn't actually work in real life. I woke up in the morning and I told my husband, I've thought of this amazing idea for this murder mystery. And it was, the chicken did it. It's like, what? So, you know, it's one of those things in which strands which seem to come together in a dream in a really compelling way made absolutely no sense in real life.
Yeah, I think that's quite often the case. If you were to think grandly about the whole thing, maybe not as logically and perhaps, I guess, philosophically, when these twists come out of nowhere, when you find yourself writing The Detective, do you believe that it's always been lurking somewhere there that you're just kind of drawing out? Does it often make most sense that the story has been leading this way, but you as the writer just haven't quite clocked it yet?
I think that's a really good way to put it. I do think that it has been lurking around, or, you know, it's a process in which if one were to map it out, perhaps the people who outline are able to, literally spell out the thought process, like, and then this is going to happen. For someone like me, it's a vague feeling or an idea. And I do a lot of my writing or thinking on walks, or when I'm actually driving around, I'll be thinking about things and I'll see the scenery of the book appear. I'll see the characters walking around and sometimes they start to do different things. So that is probably all part of this foreplanning. It's just taking a while to mull around in a different form.
Let me plonk you down on the floor in front of your coffee table. You must have excellent posture, by the way.
No, not really. I sit on a cushion, a large cushion.
Okay, you must be, you know, you're up and down. You must have like the core strength of like an Adonis. Anyway, we get quite technical. What software do you write with, and do you have any strong font and typeface opinions, Yangshi?
Oh, well, I write on Microsoft Word. And I know there's lots of other programs that other friends have told me about, but Microsoft Word works for me. And right now, I think the font I'm using is Cambria. I used to use Times, but Cambria looked a little more friendly. So, and that's about it. I'm very low tech, which is quite funny considering I live in California, where every week it seems like there's some new invention. Very soon we will be plugging our brains into the internet, I'm sure.
A rather grand question. It doesn't always come up, but I don't always get the chance to chat to someone in California. So I'm living in what can only be described as Arctic Southwest London at the moment, and it is grim and it is February. And I only mention this because the last week I've been feeling really like low on energy, right? You feel it in your core that it's just it requires so much just to keep going every day. Whereas we believe that it's, you know, storms sadly permitting, but it's sunny, right? It's vivacious. Everyone's healthy. How much does that that flow through what you do? How much do you feel that, Yangshi?
Well, actually, you know, the sunshine is very nice. I realized that because we've had a week of storms and it was very gray. And it was rather depressing, actually. I thought, no wonder people drink so much coffee in Seattle. At least for me, the constant, the sunshine is very, very nice. And so I won't lie to you, it is very sunny here a lot. But in summer, it can be a bit much. It can be blindingly, blazingly hot. So there's two sides to that. We've got very mild winters. Mostly, I get up in the morning and you know, I've still got one kid at home in high school. The other one's in university. And so I get up, she gets up, you know, the usual sort of morning, whatever, breakfast, etc. And then I make myself a cup of tea. For a long time, I didn't drink caffeine at all. And then I suddenly discovered that I cannot live without my morning cup of tea. So there we go. So I'll sit down on my at my coffee table, and I'll look at my mostly I'll catch up on emails and things like that. Sorry, this is very mundane.
No. This is the point. This is what we're after. Keep going.
And then I'll try to write, you know, And in between, I'll probably do the crossword puzzle. And sometimes my husband will be like, are you working? And I'll be very guiltily shoving my crossword away. Yes, yes, I've been thinking deeply. So, but I tend to work better in short bursts. So I might try to write something. And then go for a walk. And then I do all the other things that people do when they work from home. So housework, you know, laundry, dishwasher, cleaning. And then I'll usually fix something to eat at home, like something easy. And after lunch, I'll go for a walk and I'll think some more. And then I'll come back and try to write. It's very intermittent. And I discover that forcing myself to sit down doesn't really work, because writing fiction is not, at least for me, it's not like writing a thesis. Not that writing a thesis is easy at all. So it's a lot easier for me to write in short bursts. And this sort of goes on throughout the day until my kids come home, make dinner, and then after dinner I'll go for a walk again. It's a lot of walks. And sometimes in my family we joke around, it's like having a dog. I'll just go for a walk from time to time. And I think the pandemic really started this. I don't think I went for walks very much until we were all locked in for a while.
What makes a good day for you when you finish your intermittent writing? What are you happy with getting done? Is it a word count? Is it a place in the story? Is it just a feeling of contentment with it?
I try to write. If I can write 300 to 500 words, that's pretty good for me. It's not very much, but I feel like I decided to set myself a word count many, many years ago. And I'm a very slow writer. When things are going well, I can write 1,000, a couple thousand words a day. But normally if I'm plodding along, 300, 500 is fine. And just to keep the story moving. And one thing that I have learned is to stop when I think I know what's going to happen next. That means the next morning it's a lot easier to sit down and pick up where I was.
Well, I will agree. I mean, 300 to 500 words, it isn't that much in the scheme of some other people that I've chatted to, which is why we kind of learn so much about different people. So. Are you trying to make every word perfect first time round? I just wonder, although it's intermittent, it seems a very conscious process, much more so than it might be for other writers who are simply trying to get a dirty draft down. They crack out the words and then they'll just try and fix it later.
No, actually I don't. And when those 300 to 500 words come, they come really fast. It comes really quickly. So the other funny thing that I've noticed is that although I'll write it down fast, the best bits of writing, at least in my opinion, later on I don't need to edit them very much. So I'm slow, but there's less of coming back and, you know, having to fix large parts. Mostly it's all you know, large parts that the parts that are working well, they just came out and they'll need some tweaking, but not too much. Mostly it is the inspiration. And as we touched on earlier, it is the lack of an outline. And so when my kids were starting, you know, writing papers for school, I did tell them, like, look, you all need outlines. Everyone needs an outline. Just ignore me. So I think a lot of that time is spent internally kind of mulling things over before they come out.
And how happy are you with this? Are you perfectly fine with having an intermittent workload where maybe you do lose focus, so you need to do the crossword, you need to do some, you need to go for a walk, whatever it is? Are you perfectly fine with the way that you work?
I wish I could just, I don't think anyone's 100% happy with it. I would like it if it was more predictable. It is unpredictable to me, my output. And what I've learned is to just let it go and try to catch it, capture the words as they come out. It's hard. I can write on demand for certain things. So for shorter pieces, it's not, you know, let's say a piece for a magazine or something, it's a lot easier to work on. But a novel is something that's so large and contains a multitude of strands and stories that I find it a lot harder to put all of that into, let's say, half an hour of work. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. And it's hard to define, but do you feel your focus being dragged away from what you're doing? Like when you are in a little bit of writing, but you're coming to the end of this intermittent cycle, can you feel your energy and your focus being drawn elsewhere?
Well, actually, no. I feel that, you know, I think perhaps a better analogy is writing for me is like listening to music or playing a piece of music. So it depends on where we are in the novel, and a lot of it is feeling. So there'll be times when I feel like now, you know, it's picking up, the music is picking up, things are getting ominous, bum, 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 and things will go fast. And other times it will hit like very flat, peaceful areas, but I have a feeling that ahead there's going to be a dip, like a roller coaster ride. And that's the feeling I'm trying to capture. And I can feel the overall, the direction of the novel, but I might not know exactly what happens. So there have been a number of times when I think like something abrupt is going to happen, but I just don't know what that abrupt thing particular is. But I think it's going to change the relationship between these two characters. And so that's how I'll go in thinking like, oh no, something's happening. And then I will sometimes try a couple of things. I do remember doing this for Night Tiger. You know, there were scenes in which I felt like something big is going to happen. So in the middle of the book, there's a party at this 1930s house. And the things that happened in the party all came out of, in, I think, a couple of, one or two very intense days of writing.
When it's done for the day, when the kids are home, when you're no doubt busy with countless other things, how much is the story always there, lurking? Are you thinking on it of an evening? Are you perfectly fine at kind of putting it aside and picking it back up tomorrow?
Yeah. Although it is, as you said, it is a story that remains in the back of my head. And that's why I find that when I'm writing a novel, the world of the novel, which it always surprises me because it did not exist previously, it exists like a movie in my head, you know, the scenes and the people. A number of people have very kindly commented that my books seem cinematic to them. They feel visual. And perhaps it's because that's the way they feel to me. You know, I feel like I can see the people and I can see the room and what it looked like. So it's a fun process when it's going well. Of course, when it's not going well, it's terrible. But I feel like it's that place, that movie or that story is existing in another time, in another part of my head. And sometimes when things are going, you know, things are exciting, I'm just eager to go back because I want to know, like, oh my, who really did that? Who killed so-and-so? You know, it's not clear to me, but I feel like it will become clear.
When it's not going so well, what have you learned that helps you out, that maybe helps push these words through the day?
Well, I think sitting on the floor helps. Because when it's not going well, then I just sort of roll around a bit and think things like, oh no, this is terrible. And who wrote this book? Oh, it's me. And it's just, it when it's not going well, I've learned to let it be. When I was younger, I struggled a lot. So before I wrote any of my published books, I spent 8 years writing a terrible novel about an elephant who was a detective. It was 8 years. And I just kept plugging away. I was very stubbornly, it's like, there's so many interesting things, I should just keep going. But I've learned that it's time, sometimes I just let things go. And if I can't figure out how, what the next event was, I will sometimes just say, I'm not going to work on my book for a couple of days. I'm going to do something completely different.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One of Scotland's most notorious unsolved murders.
To think that someone could turn a cheese wire into a garrote and take someone's life.
The level of violence, the uncertainty and the randomness frightened people.
She always thought the killer was going to come back after her.
Society needs to find that killer.
Who is the cheese wire killer? Listen to the full series now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Who is the Cheese Wire Killer is sponsoring the show this week. Make sure you listen to the full series wherever you get your podcast and be in the heart of a live investigation. You can support us next week if you have published a book that has not had the plugging, the praise and all the marketing that I no doubt it deserves. You can, well, I'll make that happen. I will do it for you. Your book can sponsor this show next week. To make that happen, become a backer over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/writersroutine, and it doesn't take a lot, I promise. Just a little bit, a few dollars every month helps us keep going. It helps me keep bringing you these chats with the biggest and best authors around, such a wide variety of storytellers and writers. And it's just a one-man team. It's just me. I do everything that you hear, more or less every week. And I'd love your support to help that happen. You get merch, there is bonus content online, there is even a way for your book to sponsor this show. Become a backer, help us out, just a few dollars a month. It helps me keep bringing you these chats as often as I can. To do that, get involved at patreon.com/writersroutine. Let's get back into it then with Yung Shi Chu chatting through her third novel, The Fox Wife. You can hear more about the story in this part. Also, we get quite philosophical. We chat through how we think, not just as writers, but as humans. How much do we see? How much do we visualise? How can that change from person to person? We run through all of that. And we pick it up talking about her debut success, The Ghost Bride. It was adapted by Netflix. It made her a New York Times bestseller. How did that change the way that she saw future books?
I just never expected to be a novelist. And I'm always surprised. I'm very honoured and grateful that anyone has read any of my books at all, because as a reader myself, there are thousands and thousands of wonderful novels waiting to be read. So I didn't really expect it. And I've always gone forward to the next novel in this slightly Eeyore way, thinking, oh, well, that was lovely. I don't know whether anyone's going to like this one. So, and I do think, like, writing slowly in many ways is kind of a minus, because I don't produce a lot of work quickly. But it does seem to be the only way that I can write. So I've just kind of muddled on.
When you finish a book and when it's published, are you immediately on to the next one? Do you give yourself a bit of breathing room? Because the gaps between your novels are slightly longer than I'm used to discussing, I'm really interested in that time frame, right? And I know that you write slowly, but are you giving yourself breathing room? Are you jumping straight into it? Just kind of run through a few years. No, I know. But you know, I don't want the daily routine of every day.
It's just like terrible. Everyone will go to sleep.
run through that kind of vague routine of what happens when you've handed in your final manuscript. When do you start thinking about the next book? When will you sit down to write that next book in grand terms?
I mean, actually, in an ideal world, I'll have started the next book already. So that happened for both. You know, when I was finishing up Ghost Bride, I already had the first chapter of Night Tiger. And when I was finishing up Night Tiger, I had the first chapter of The Fox Wife already. This time around, I did not have the first chapter when I finished up The Fox Wife, and I thought, oh no, this is really bad. This is terrible. But first chapters, and we could talk for a long time about that. The first chapter for me is actually really important. It sets the whole, you know, the whole book for me comes out of the first chapter, and I will often write the first chapter very much almost exactly as you'll read it in the final book. Because to me, it sets up the whole story, it's just like the anchor of the book for me. So ideally, I have something. This time around, I mentioned I didn't really have anything, so I wrote a number of things until I came up with the first chapter of my current book. But I've gone back and forth on it, so I do think that it is hard to see ahead sometimes.
And we mentioned that success, and I know you said you go into it with a slightly Eeyore mindset, Does the pressure change things? I mean, knowing that there is likely to be an audience there, like thousands of readers looking for the next Yang Shichu novel, does that change how you work at all?
You know, I try not to let it. And the other way I think about it is, like I said, I feel very lucky that I've written one book or two books or three books. And there's a part of me that has this slightly fatalistic feeling of, well, if I cannot write anymore, well, that was it. And I'm happy with the ones that I've written. So, then I tell myself that it was, you know, if I can write something, I'd like it to be good. You know, I'd like to, if there are people who are waiting for another book, I hope that it's one that feels like it's worth waiting for. But I do wish I could write faster.
And you mentioned thinking cinematically, and this is something I'm very interested in with the new age of streaming and with them needing a lot of content, and The Ghost Bride was adapted for Netflix. How much do you think that, does that change at all how you picture your novels, knowing that, well, one day this might be turned into a series or a film. There's a much better chance than ever before. Like, does that warp how you plan or see these things?
Not really. You know, I think, like, very early on, my wonderful literary agent had also said that most books don't get optioned, and most options don't turn into films or movies, etc. And so I never really expected that. I also think that when you read a book, everyone has their own book movie playing in their heads, you know? So you might be reading the same plot and someone has maybe the Disney version and somebody else has the Guillermo del Toro version. So, you know, everything changes inside the reader's head. And so when I think if there are film adaptations, I do think it will be like seeing dreams, like other people's dreams in their heads come out. And that's a completely different art form. It's fascinating. But that also reminds me that, you know, my family did this. I don't remember why. I think one of my kids had come home and we were discussing how people think. And she had said, do you think, when you think thoughts in your head, do you hear a voice? And I said, no, I don't think I hear a voice. I see pictures when I think. So that was a really fun discussion. What about you, Dan? When you're thinking of something, how does that happen to you?
I think it's a mixture of a lot of things. I think I do have a constant narration going on in my head, whether that's done by an out loud voice or if it's a blend of the two, I can't really say. Funny enough, I spoke to an author recently who discovered when he was quite old that he had what they call aphantasia, which is where you can't picture things.
Huh.
So, and there's interesting tests that you can do online where it basically asks you to imagine a red apple, and there are degrees to how well you picture a red apple, like how vivid it is. Is it just the outline? Is it maybe an apple that you've seen in your past? And that really blew my mind because, well, this is an author, right? Author, you imagine that authors are very good at picturing things in their brain because that's how they write such compelling stories. Yet he discovered that he could not do that. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's something that I have thought about a lot before as well, like how we think and
I think you're right. You know, it's really fascinating. There is tremendous variation in how, if you think about us as humans, we've all been equipped with roughly the same kind of equipment, right? But the way that it goes into our brains and how you interpret it is very, very different. And the whole thing of how do you experience your own thoughts? That is fascinating. Aphantasia, does that make him perhaps a better descriptor of things?
I think he maintained that it explained why his novels were quite dialogue heavy, why they were very action packed, very dialogue heavy. But yeah, I think aphantasia. Well, I mean, you're getting quite philosophical there, right? I mean, it goes back to the old school Descartes of I think, therefore I am. Like the fact that we know as well that we are thinking, so we have a thought that maybe isn't good for us, and we can pinpoint that and understand and kind of watch this thinker. Yeah, it's you get quite into it. So I tell you what, let's talk about your new novel. This is The Fox Wife. Just tell us, young Shi, about the first moment that the idea for this story came into your head.
Oh, well, I was a tail end of my other book, The Night Tiger, and I thought a Night Tiger was set, as The Ghost Bride was, in Malaysia, or colonial Malay, as it was at the time. And I spent a lot of time writing about the jungle. Night Tiger was about tigers who turn into men. And when I was a kid, you know, my dad would take us through the rainforest. We used to, there was a forest reserve nearby. And the sounds, the smell of the jungle and the heat, the shimmering heat in the middle of the day, all those were very real to me when I was writing that. And after I was done, I thought I would like to write a book about a cold place. So I thought about snow, and the fox in the book is actually called Snow. I sat, and it is set actually in 1908 in Manchuria, that's northeastern China, a very cold place. And I wrote the first chapter, like I said, when I was working on the other book, as kind of a break from things, you know, as a fun thing to write. And the voice of the narrator really struck me. It was the voice of a woman who claims to be a fox. And in Chinese, Korean, and Japanese literature, there is this, there is a legend of these shape-shifting foxes who can turn themselves into very attractive people. So I just wrote that first chapter, and then I put it aside for a while until I finished the other book, and then I started writing The Fox Wife.
So, yeah, when you finally get round to writing it, and you've mentioned how you want to make the first draft, the first chapter rather, as almost perfect as it can be, what are you, and we've discussed how you don't plot, so what are you doing before you start writing that first sentence? When you've got that idea about mythology and about legends and about foxes, what are you thinking before you do start typing?
You know, that's so funny. I am not thinking. My fingers are typing, and the sentences, this is like, I think, other parts of the book, when things are going well, this is what it feels like. I'm thinking and typing simultaneously. The thoughts are coming into being, if that makes any sense. And it's, when it's fun, it's just delightful. You know, you think, oh my goodness, this is a funny idea. And, you know, when it's not going well, it's not going well. But that's how I felt like when I sat down. I still remember to write the first chapter of this book.
What's interesting as well is that this seems like a novel steeped in culture, right? The culture, the evocative setting as well of Manchuria. Yet you are from, you know, with it, like all over the place, right? I mean, you are a Malaysian writer of Chinese descent. This is what I see. You were born in the Philippines, and you've lived in Thailand, Germany, Japan, Singapore. You went to Harvard, and now you're in the Bay Area. Like, how do you go about, I guess, cherry picking the elements of culture that you want to write about, the and places and settings that you are influenced by? How does that churn into the mix?
Oh, you know, I think what happens is the story drives it. And so what I was interested in was foxes. And in East Asian literature, as I mentioned, the fox spirit is very well known. And there's so many stories about foxes. So growing up, I read a lot of them. And they are these tricksters who show up to, you know, sometimes murder people, other times to seduce them. And I thought, you know, there's a style of this story in which it's usually late at night and a scholar is studying for the imperial exams when there's a knock on the door and it's a beautiful woman who later turns out to be not human at all. So I've always been fascinated by the idea of who are these creatures? Why do they come at night? And what lies on the other side of the door? So it was fun to write about the book, to have the book be from the point of view of the creature who comes from the outside. Normally we have the human-centered view of who's knocking on my door. So reversing that was quite interesting. And like I said, the story drives everything. I knew quite a lot about foxes, but I also enjoyed, you know, literally going down lots of rabbit holes when I did research for it as well, because the cult of the fox is a very ancient religion. It's probably has its roots in animism, and for a long time, foxes were worshipped as minor gods or deities, along with other creatures. In fact, in northeast China, they are called the Wu Da Men, which is the five great households, and they consist of the fox, the hedgehog, I think the snake, the weasel, and the rat. And it's fascinating because those are not what we'd necessarily think of as gods, which raises other questions. Sometimes I can feel it when I'm writing it. I feel like, oh, this is the thread that's going to open a road. And other times, it's more apparent in retrospect, you know? And that's why it's always really fun to meet readers or visit book clubs, because people who like to read books have so many ideas. And it's just sometimes I'll be talking to readers and they'll be like, did you mean this, blah, blah, blah? And I think, oh, you know, you're right. There are elements of that. So it's a mixture of all these things.
And it also means you are researching on the go. It's not like you can sit down beforehand and do bucket loads of reading and traveling to figure things out. And I know that you went over to China, but COVID completely scuppered what you were writing and you had to redraft. Just run us through that story.
Well, actually, I had gone to China to visit the garden villas of Hangzhou and Suzhou, the very ancient, beautiful gardens. And I actually used them as the, you know, because they inspire a lot of the novel takes place in these villas, which were courtyard gardens, etc. And I'd planned a second trip to go to the north, to Dalian, this port which I was writing about, and then COVID hit. And so I moved part of the book to Japan, to Moji, where I had, you know, I lived in Japan as a child, and I had also been to Moji, which is near Fukuoka. So I always like to write about places I've been to. And in some ways, it's the reverse. You know, you'd mentioned like going out to do research, etc. I do that. But before I even begin the novel, I think I usually write about something that I feel I know quite a lot about. So I had, you know, I read a lot about foxes. And when I was doing Night Tiger, I felt like I knew the world of, you know, 1930s Malaysia. Of course, not 1930s, but because of my grandparents' stories and, you know, having lived there as well. And then Ghost Bride was based in Malacca, which was a town in Malaysia where my uncle lived when I was a child. And we used to visit him. And it is a town with a very old and rather creepy history, lots of ghost stories. So in all those instances, I think I start off feeling that I sort of know this area. I know what's behind this story, and then I'll start writing, and then I'll also pick up research as I'm doing that.
Let's just get back to the roadmap. How do you know, when do you get a sense that this is drawing to an end? I mean, obviously, it can't go on forever, right? I mean, 400 pages, whatever it is. I mean, so you've got that vague framework in your brain. And at what point do you think, oh, this is where we're heading?
You know, the funny thing is that I often don't want to end the novel because it takes so long to set up. And when I was writing Ghost Bride, for example, I had no idea of how long novels should be. All my books have been twice the length they should be. And then after they're done, myself and my agent, we spend a lot of time saying, okay, it comes down to word count. You've got to cut this in half. And it's really painful. But if I had my druthers, I would like to write a serial, you know, as in those Victorian or whatever, in which every week a new installment would show up and the story could keep going on. So, for example, for The Ghost Bride, it ends because of the word count. But I had already planned and started writing another section of the novel called The Courts of Hell, which was going to explore the Chinese justice system in hell, which is actually kind of interesting, because they had this concept of hell in the Chinese afterlife being very bureaucratic. So I've always thought about that. And for Night Tiger, which was my second novel, it does end there. But I had planned in my head, if they would let me, I would have written another section of the novel in which the characters all go on to Singapore and do other things.
Well, it must be much harder for you to cut things down when you are pantsing your novel, when you're not planning at all and everything's kind of growing organically, because you can't just lift bits out, right? I mean, if you're plotting and if you've got a few storylines, then, I mean, it might be very naive of me to say, but you can just pick, you can just chop a whole section out and it should still work. But it must be so different for you.
No, not really. I think that by the time the novel is written, you know, the story is a story, and then the editing process is probably similar. You know, in my case, sometimes it's been driven by, oh no, this part, it's balancing the whole story. And when you've finished it, it's like a big lump of shaggy dough. And you're like, okay, I think I've got to fit it into this tin. And you kind of poke and prod it. And other times, you know, it is just like any other editing process. When it's all done, you might be like, oh, it was too slow here. Let's cut some of it. But really, for me, as I said, it's part of it is the word count. I have to fit it into a certain word count. And in order to do that, you've got to snip around. It's like more like it's like gardening or pruning a tree. You know, you'll realize I cannot prune the main trunk, but I might have to take out an entire part of this canopy to make it fit. And so that takes a while.
And it's 2024 now. When are you hoping to get another book out?
Oh, you know, Dan, I have to tell you, I was at some on a literary panel and they asked that, and there were, I think, five of us authors on it. And they said, everybody, when is your next book coming out? And everyone's face fell and we're like, I don't know, working on something now. So I am working on something, and it's once again going very slowly, but hopefully I'll have something by the end of this year. At least I'm hoping to have a rough draft.
And that's it for this week's episode with Yung Shi Chu. The new novel is The Fox Wife. It is out right now. Thank you, Yung Shi, for coming on the show. Next week, I'll bring you a brand new author on the podcast. In the meantime, make sure you support us over on our Patreon page, patreon.com/writersroutine. Get involved over on our Twitter page, at X. We are at Writers Pod. Still always confusing. At Writers Pod there. And you can get in touch with the show at writersroutine.com. And I will see you next week with a brand new author. Until then, thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.